Since the 1800s, Hickok & Boardman Insurance Group has been providing quality service and peace of mind to our clients. With our offices in Burlington, Stowe, and St. Albans, and our Dennis Ricker & Brown offices in Montpelier and Lynnonville, we are here when you need us.
WDEV FM and AM presents our two-hour public affairs program, Open Mic with Mike Smith. Important topics, topical guests, and your phone calls. And now here's the host of Open Mic, Mike Smith.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us. 2 weeks until Election Day. Today's guest, Bill Lee, candidate for governor, will join us in studio, sitting right across from me right now. And also Bob Ney will call in from Talk Media News and share his thoughts on national politics. And we'll do some questions at the end of the program and get your opinions. For example, question one, a majority of Americans distrust or dislike the two major party candidates. What should a voter do if they don't like either presidential candidate? Vote for the least offensive or vote for someone else? But it's my pleasure to welcome into our WDEV studios right now, Bill Lee, candidate for governor. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning. Nice to be here. Do I get to answer that question?
You get to answer any question.
I like that question because the answer is vote for me because I can be governor and president. We'll have no problems in this country, I guarantee you.
Why do you want to be governor?
I really didn't set out to be governor. I ran for president in 1988 on the Rhino ticket, and they picked Bill Clinton over me, and I think we've gone downhill since then. And then all of a sudden, I went to a meeting with the Liberty Union Party down in Brattleboro, and Peter Diamondstone, who I'd never met, and a bunch of other guys and girls that were there said, "You have to run. You have to resurrect our party. You know, it's the spirit of Bernie Sanders. He started here." And then they parted company, and Bernie became a progressive and a socialist in Burlington. And, then he went to Hardwick. And I remember when he was standing on the corner and they were throwing beer bottles and beer cans at him when he said, "I'm Bernie Sanders," back when he was going for the House of Representatives. And I kind of bailed him out there. And they said to me, "Bill, you know, you have to run." And I go, "You know, I really don't want to. I don't have the time." And he says, "But you're the voice of reason." And then I went home and I read a book by Plato. And it talks about him as a young man sitting on Socrates' knee in Athens. And it said, in The Art of Governing, it said, "You know, if you're asked to run and you don't, that's the greatest disservice you can do for your fellow men." And I went, "Damn, I wish I hadn't read that." And then I pushed it back and I said, "Okay, I'll run." And I've been doing a fairly good job, I think.
Are you serious about this? And the reason I ask that question is if you look at two of the things that you've talked about. One is if the temperature is below your age, you don't have to go to work. You need to do something, but you don't have to go to the work. And number two, the opiate reduction, have your kids run to school.
Yeah, I like both of those. Actually, the first part is based on St. Petersburg, you know, where the Tampa Bay Devil Rays were. What I said was in that specifically that people in St. Petersburg aren't allowed out of their house unless their temperature matches their age. And that was a pun on St. Petersburg that no one goes to the Devil Ray games except Red Sox fans. And if they're only Red Sox fans going down there, they get to see them in spring training. So why not move them to the Expos, make them call them the Montreal X-Rays, and that way more tourists and people will venture through Vermont to go to see him, plus Yankee fans, Baltimore fans, Boston Red Sox especially. They have to go through Vermont to get to Montreal. And I thought that would generate a lot of revenue. This is called thinking outside the box. That's what I call it. And what was the second part?
It
was,
well, first of all, you and I would never have to go to work, I don't think.
No, I'm... You know, it's a pun and a play on the fact that they're old down there. You know, don't go to Florida. I remember a guy played for me. His name was Ralph Henderson. He's from Newberry. And he was a great outfielder. The trouble is he was a cardboard cutout. He was 74, couldn't run. He could hit. He's the only guy I know to hit a ball over the third base bag into the left field corner down in Winter Haven back in the old Red Sox fantasy camps that I used to do back here in Vermont. And he's the only guy I know that was thrown out he was thrown out 7-6, 4-3. In other words, he ran so slow, he didn't make it. And his wife convinced him to go to Florida and stay down there. He died within the year. So it's a don't go to Florida. It's a bad trip.
The second part of that question was opiate reduction.
Yes.
Part of your program for opiate reduction was to have kids run to school.
Yes, because endorphins are secreted in your own body. And I was in Red China in 76. I'm one of the first guys to go on a junket to Mao was still alive. I was at Zhou Enlai's funeral in winter of 75, 76. And I looked at the children. I went to preschool. I went to elementary school. And they were all bundled up. It was in the winter. And the first thing they did was run them around a track. And they ran them and ran them and ran them. And they were all red in the cheeks. And they were all breathing heavily. And then they educated them. And I'm looking, wow, they don't have an opioid crisis over there. And I looked at things and I said, your endorphins are the number one painkillers in your brain. Secrete your own drugs. And I believe that will force you to eat better. It'll force you to have better attentive skills early on. And I know that's what happened to me because when I was very little, I was put in adaptive PE because they thought I was a spaz. And they thought I had an attention deficit disorder. Well, I did. I was dyslexic, I hyperactive, and what did they do? They ran me, and they put me through gymnastics. And what did you get? I got a good body, I got a good brain, and all I have to do is control my emotions. And my dad said, you know, 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
There's a huge issue in your neck of the woods, and that is industrial wind on the ridgelines.
Oh.
What's your position on industrial windmills on the ridgelines?
It's the worst thing that ever happened. When those red lights started going up on the Lowell Mountains, I knew something was going to happen. You know, every time a rafter dies, every time a black bear is drawn out of its habitat, that's a negative for the state of Vermont. These, I will create jobs. I will tear them down. I will fix that up so the ridgelines are pristine. We do not need industrial solar wind where we get no benefits. That's Metro Gas out of Montreal. Those are Dutch windmills. I don't see any benefit for them. I want small ones. In fact, I will cut those things up into rings, and I'll make biodiesel pits so that we have on our farms to keep the pollutants from running into the rivers. And you know, I believe every farm, every big farm should have a biodiesel pit. They should have a way to keep their waste and keep all the formaldehyde from their dairy operations out of the rivers. It'll clean up the rivers. It'll help everything. And then are the farm, the credits, the carbon credits that go to, you know, the places like Chicago and Cleveland, that allows them to burn more coal. That's all this is. Where you're going to get your power is from the Bay of Fundy. Because I'm good friends with the premiers of Nova Scotia and New Brunswick and Quebec. And I believe that regionally we can harness the tidal bore, the Bay of Fundy. We'll harness the 45-foot tides, especially in the spring and the fall, when they're very fast. If you've ever flown over New Minas Basin and you've overflown over the Bay of Fundy all the way up where Nova Scotia and New Brunswick are, there is so much energy there. That's guy Nikola Tesla said that. He said the way the Earth rotates and the way we have a retrograde moon, the way it all comes up, that's where your power is. And Archimedes said, you give me a fulcrum, a place to stand, and a long enough lever, I can move the Earth. So I believe we've always – I'm an Arbuckminster Fullerite. I am a Schumacher. I am the Meadows, limits to growth. I don't believe in the way we're doing it. It's a money cow. You know, the people in Lowell made a killing, but we got to look at those windmills. And I'm telling you, they're ugly, and they have a flicker effect. I believe the bus crash yesterday on I-15 going out of Palm Springs was created by an epileptic fit that the bus driver had because of the flicker effect of the windmills, and he ran right in the back of that truck and killed all those people. You know, there's no autopsy yet, but every time I see it, every time I drive by a windmill, I feel like I'm going to have an epileptic fit.
We're speaking with Bill Lee, candidate for governor. One of the questions that I wanted to come back on with the environment, we'll stay on the environment for two more questions, but do you believe in climate change and do you believe it's man-made?
Well, as we've just went over 400 particles of CO2 for the first time in a million years. you know, the first time. So how long have we been on this planet? About 2 million years, mankind. So we've evolved to the point where we're destroying our own environment, and we're doing it at a rapid rate. Are the great reefs of the Americas and of South Florida and Hawaii and the one off of Australia, the really big one, 22% of that coral has died. And it's all because of heat-related injury to the planet Earth. Yeah. Why did the Army Corps of Engineers 15 years ago build all the jetties on the Pacific coast, on the East Coast, raise them six inches? They knew something was coming. You know, I'm not stupid and I'm not blind, and I see things. I see things the way the decimation of our maples here. And Dr. Sazawa, the one up in Canada, he said it's eventually going to move further. Your oaks are moving further in. They're taking over because they enjoy the heat and everything else. We have to limit our methane, especially our methane, because it's seven times greater harm than CO2. And the fluorocarbons. We finally passed a bill that the developing nations will not use hydrofluorocarbons in their refrigeration. This was a great step into the future. And, yeah, trust me, mankind has done this. We pollute. Look at the Amazon rainforest. This is another thing. We have decimated that. We have decimated everything on this planet. And here's a great segue into it. It costs five times as much energy for Alcoa to make aluminum as it does to recycle aluminum. Five times. You can look that up. Anything that I say that you disagree with, come to my house. We'll sit down and have a debate because I see the big picture. And why? I was the head of the bottle bill. I started the bottle bill with Dukakis in Massachusetts when I was with the Red Sox. I was the guy that said, don't drive faster than my fastball, 55 miles an hour. I'm the guy who started ride arranging and car sharing in Burlington. The first thing I did when I come to this state, you know, Lloyd Squires, I lived in his cabin. The first place I ever lived is Ken Squires' father's cabin up in Middlesex Notch. And I saw global warming. You know, you have greater cold snaps, you have greater dry snaps. As the environment heats, the ability to the atmosphere to carry more water, and thereby they don't give it back. That's why we have drought in California. That's why we have spasmodic drought in Texas for 7 years, and then all of a sudden we had a wet spell, and everybody flooded. And everybody, I flew over yesterday. I flew over Nag's Head coming back from doing a charity event down in Sarasota. And you should have seen all the pollutants from the pig farms going out into the Atlantic Ocean. It was the scariest thing I had seen. And this, you've got to control your agriculture so it doesn't get into your water supply.
Carbon tax. Are you for a carbon tax then?
Oh, yeah. Sin tax, carbon tax. Carbon's bad. You know, I was with Phil Scott, and we were standing up on the stage. I said, you know why they call it a fossil fuel, Phil? He goes, no. Why? I says, because they're not making any more of it. It's a fossil. Something died to give us that. And I said, all you do is make left turns around in a circle going nowhere, you know, burning up fossil fuels. And I agree. And I said, you know what NASCAR stands for? He goes, no, Bill, what's that? I said, non-athletic sports centered around rednecks. He goes, is that a compliment or an accolade? I said, neither, Phil.
let's turn to health care. We're speaking with Bill Lee, candidate for governor. Health care, do you support the all-payer model that Governor Shumlin is pushing now?
Shumlin, we're a small state. You can't do it on the backs of Vermonters. We have to. This is part of my plan to absorb and have a regional area, which is kind of like the Second Vermont Republic, because in 1780, I believe, there was Shays' Rebellion. In 1791, about 9 years later, we became a state when they finally talked, Ira and the other Allen.
Ethan,
yeah, the one that fell off the back of the cart. I loved him. You know, I would have loved to have partied with him. But we could have been our own republic, and we could have been part of Canada, because this was Upper Canada Village. Where I live on my ridge, right where I live on my ridge, I am part of the watershed that drains into the Black. On the other side of my house, it drains into the Wild Branch, the Lamoille, and it drains into Champlain, which is the United States. I actually live in Canada before 17... you know, 91 when we became, or 1777 when we became the first republic, I think it was, after the war. So it's all part of the same thing. I can, like Bernie Sanders said, we can get into a bus and we can drive to Stansted on 91 and get off and we can get our drugs for 70% less. We can go up and get where I get my, all my orthopedic stuff is all done because of my expo days when I got the living snot beat out of me and fell down a lot, and $18 for an x-ray. I'm going, why can't we have exactly what Quebec has? Why can't we have it? And then people, guys like Trump go, well, everybody's in waiting line, and baloney. I get my stuff done. I got all my implants done. All my teeth are done. All these things in my face that are when I got hit with the line drive and knocked out last winter. That's probably why I'm running for governor, because I got hit with this line drive, and it either woke me up or knocked me down. And I believe the problem is pharma. Pharma spends $3 billion in the United States. Do you know why inflation went up 1% last month? Because the pharmaceutical industry got profits of 7.2%. 7.2%. They're the ones that caused the rise. They, all of our senators and everybody that takes money from pharmaceutical companies ought to be shot, you know, and that's my story, and I'm sticking with it. And it's not our health. What we're doing is we're attacking a symptom, trying to solve a problem, when the problem is Citizens United and the pharmaceuticals and Wells Fargo getting $32 million severance bond for that thief that forced all of his employees to give us extra credit cards so we could become more in debt to the banking system. It's all interrelated. Trump is not wrong. Trump is right in some respects. The trouble with his problem is he's just a nasty, anal retentive, you know, nasty guy that makes derogatory statements. And guess what? He never made those statements about the women. You know what he, you know why? Because it's locker room talk. And to have locker room talk, you have to make the team. And he's never made a team.
Let's go back to healthcare. Healthcare, you have promoted, as you just mentioned, yeah, sort of a single payer program. How would you pay for that?
We're going to pay for it because we're going to raise the minimum wage. People are going to make more money. Our whole economy is going to boom when we go to smaller. It's going to be like Pete's Greens, those pigs. This is the most beautiful thing in the world. These pigs are out laying in the field. They're sunning themselves. They're rolling in the mud, and they're eating apples. They're not even standing up to eat the apples. It's the beautifulest thing in the world. Not like the pigs that are down in Virginia and the pigs that are down in North Carolina, you know, that are in these tin sheds that you can see from 37,000 feet. And when we make all this more money, and we combine with Quebec, New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, you know, and Newfoundland, too. We'll even take the Newfies. And it's going to be a regional thing. I see America. There's a book I read back in the 70s, Ecotopia. And Northern California separates from Southern California. And they join with Oregon and Washington, British Columbia. And then you have Alberta, and you have all this tar sands oil region up there. And I see the earth. I'm without borders. I believe in Sans Frontier and Buckminster Fuller, and I see a world view. And this is why being governor is not a stepping stone, but we have to reorganize our whole view on this planet. We don't want Syrian refugees in Rutland. People don't want them there. What I want is not them to be refugees. I want them to live in Syria in peace. I don't want them putting little babies into boats and going across the Mediterranean Sea with all these strong winds and dying. You know, we don't want immigration. We want these countries, every country, we have to have teeth in the United Nations. We have to be able to stop all these ISIS. ISIS would never have happened if I was elected by the Rhino ticket in 1988. I guarantee you we would not have gone into Baghdad. My dad is older than Iraq. My dad is older because of the Balfour Agreement. There shouldn't have been World War I first. World War I was a mistake. It was a bunch of rich, you know, people that were called monarchs. And they all ended up fighting together, and we got involved. Woodrow Wilson finally sent our troops over. And, you know, it's a bad thing because there wouldn't have been Hitler. Then if there's not Hitler, there's not the Cold War. If there's not the Cold War, there wouldn't have been ISIS. There would not have been all this. Syria is French. Baghdad is British. You know, all these things. That's the Balfour Agreement. Saudi Arabia. Remember when they said Obama was an Arab and the guy from Arizona, McCain, said, no, ma'am, he's a good family man, and he's not an Arab. And she goes, yeah, he's an Arab. And I go, she doesn't even know where the word Arab comes from. It comes from the Arabian Peninsula. And she doesn't even know where the Iberian Peninsula is. And I'm telling you, we got so many dumb Americans in this country, which takes us on to education.
We'll get to education. I want to make sure I understand this. $1.4 billion was the estimated cost of a single payer here in Vermont. What you're saying is let's regionalize that approach?
Exactly. I mean, everybody's different. I believe, in fact, healthcare, if you adopt my eating policies, my syntax, and everything I'm going to put on food, we're going to be healthy. You know, these people are going to be looking for people to come in. If you run your children, if you make them eat right and break down the big farms and make them organic, people will eat right, they'll be healthy, and they won't need to go to hospitals. You know, we got to put more physical education back in our education system, not just the kids that are playing soccer. If you take a test of every soccer player in Vermont, every basketball player in Vermont, every football player in Vermont, they're not in the hospital. The people that are in the hospital are the people that are drinking soda, eating white bread, and eating and not exercising enough. Our health care will go down tremendously if you get a healthier population.
Do you believe in legalization of marijuana?
Yes, I do. And I believe in growing hemp. Here's a great story. This is the funniest thing I ever saw. I'm up there showing my movie in Montreal. Guy comes to me and he goes, Bill, here, look at this. And he goes, yeah. I said, who are you? I said, I work in Ontario. I have the commission for legalizing and for growing marijuana. I said, where are you doing it? Smith Falls, Ontario. I know where that is. That's where the Hershey plant is. He goes, you won't believe it. That's where we're doing it, in the old Hershey plant. I said, you're making marijuana in a Hershey plant? I'm going, wow, that's brilliant. I said, because I know I've been on the cover of High Times 3 times. I am 69 years old. I won the Vermont State Championship. I beat Montpelier. I beat Middlebury. I beat Colchester. I beat Williston. I beat all the four of the top teams at the end of the month. You know, and I don't smoke that much anymore, but it's not a gateway drug. It is a gateway drug for me, and it tells me to quit drinking and go to bed. It's a gateway to my bedroom.
let me ask this one question before we go to break here, and I will invite questions or comments if you want to call in at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255 to speak with Bill Lee, candidate for governor. Bill, what's your position on gun control?
Wow. See this jacket I got on? What's that? That's a Browning. That's the buck. This is a Browning shirt. I have a Browning Auto 5. It has a plug in it. You know why? Because you're only allowed 3 shots at migratory birds. And a partridge around here, you're never going to get a third shot at a partridge. I believe in limiting clip size. I believe that people that, if you go into a store and you say, I need a Glock 17 for protection, you know, you got to have a psychological profile on this person. Go out and buy 2 geese. You don't really need the gun. You need 2 gray geese on your front porch. They'll tell you when people are coming. You got any gray geese? you know why they call it a Glock 17? Because there's 16 in the clip and 1 in the chamber. You know what I'm saying? You don't need that many bullets. People, they're fearful. Teach Aikido. Teach martial arts. Teach yoga. Teach stuff so people don't fight and don't get into arguments anymore, and you won't need that many guns. And the people that want guns are mostly fearful people. How about the little baby that shot her mother in a Walmart with a handgun? I mean, that is the dumbest thing I ever heard. And that's, you know what I call that? I call that thinning the herd. You know, stupid people. People say, do you regulate guns and everything else? Yeah, every time I make sure. Because every time I go to a gun, I pretend like it's loaded. You know, and then I clear the chamber and I make sure. Yeah, it's not. Because you never know when a 2-year-old or a toddler is going to load your gun. You know, baloney. A 2-year-old toddler can't pull down on a Browning Auto 5. I have more guns. The NRA called me and they said, Bill, we want you to join the NRA. I go, not unless I can be the top dog. LaPierre and everything else when Heston died. I said, give me his job. Cold this gun out of my, you know, pry this gun out of my cold, dead hand. And I'll tell you a great story. Marcel Massey, which is in, he's a goat farmer and he's a chicken processor. Great guy. He's come down from Quebec and he lives there. He goes, Bill, I tell you, he says, the man that takes my gun, he's got to be some strong man. And I went, you're right, Marcel. I go, they're not going to take your gun. Don't worry about that. This is fear professed by the right wing and by the the Republicans that they're going to take away your Second Amendment rights. They'll never take away your Second Amendment rights. This is to rattle you guys up to make you vote Republican, which is basically against your best wishes because they're not doing you any service. And, they're not going to take my guns, you know, and I got more guns. I'm the only conservative running in this race. I am so conservative. I load my own ammunition. I know how to gut a rabbit faster than anybody that's ever seen. I shot 1,000 pounds of venison in Montana in one day. Is there any other candidate running here that's done that? Phil Scott's not a conservative. I'm the conservative.
We're speaking with Bill Lee, candidate for governor. If you wish to join the conversation, give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. We'll take your phone calls when we come back. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith, and in studio with me is Bill Lee, candidate for governor. Before I get to the phones, and the phones are, there are callers that are waiting here and I want to get to them. I've always been curious about this, and I want to ask you, do you like the moniker Spaceman?
I never liked it. It was given to me by the Baltimore Sun, which is H.L. Mencken's old paper. I liked H.L. Mencken. He was at the Scopes Monkey trial with when they were trying to railroad that teacher about, I guess that was about, whether apes matriculated into men or something like that. They made Inherit the Wind, a great movie. But I hated it because I pitched a 8 2/3 innings of relief for Louis Tion. He got knocked out in the first inning. I got two hits. I got a fake bunt, double down the left field line to drive in the winning run past Brooks Robinson, Hall of Famer. I went 8 2/3 innings. Tion got credit for one out because he'd walked the bases loaded. Two runs were already in. He had a terrible game. And our manager said I didn't have the stamina to go 9. Well, I ended up going 9. We won the game. We went into first place. We landed on the moon. And that was when I said it was spam in a can, kind of quoting all the old test pilots that I really adored in the book, The Right Stuff. And so they said, well, the spaceman and John Kennedy had made a date with his divorcee. He couldn't change his clothes fast enough to go spark this girl over there in the bar, an Irish bar. And he goes, we got our own spaceman right here. Well, they wrote down Spaceman Lands in Baltimore, and I've been the spaceman ever since. So I was basically named by a horny third baseman. Go figure.
Let's go to the phone lines. Let's go to Rich in Huntington. Rich, you're on Open Mic with Bill Lee.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Bill, I've really enjoyed your campaign. It's added a lot of color and spice to the race. Sometimes politicians and candidates have to use colorful language to stimulate interest in things. Sometimes things they said 10 years ago are dredged up to use against them. I mean, certainly you must have used language in your locker room days that would not be suitable for radio. And you had some very critical words to say about Donald Trump and things that he's said. Yet just a few minutes ago on this very interview, I heard you say that any politician who takes money from big pharmaceutical companies should be shot. I mean, that's kind of right up there with the rhetorical language that Trump has used. I'm going to assume that you don't literally mean that a firearm should be used on somebody who accepts.
Of course not.
Okay.
Of course not. But are you the rich that wanted to buy my? Are you the rich that wanted to buy my Colt 36 caliber rimfire?
No, I would go through a dealer and a proper background check. That's my opinion, but
good for you. Good for you. No, there was a guy from Huntington that came to my house, and he wanted that because he thought it belonged to the first gun of Jesse James was a 36 caliber rimfire.
Let me ask this question, though. Locker room talk, is it is it talk that you probably wouldn't want to get out?
For sure. What stays in the locker room, what's said in the locker room stays in the locker room. It's always been that way. You never tell it on a bus. You know, it's very apropos that it was a, oh, never mind, I can't say that on the air, but it's Billy Bush brought down Donald Trump. Can you write a script better than that?
Let's go to Ziggy in Newport. Ziggy, you're on open mic with Bill Lee.
Mike, it's about time you had a serious conversation program here at night in the 9 o'clock hour. It's about time.
Serious? You're not serious all the time?
it's a lot of baloney. But listen, the spaceman thing really blew my bubble. I was going to tell the guys they really ruined it when they came back into this segment to play the Birds' Mr. Spaceman thing.
Yeah.
But if you never liked that moniker...
played it. I was down in Tampa, Ybor City, and Dan played that song for me personally about 15 years ago. I was very flattered.
Hey, with the World Series going on,
yeah,
I got my order in for Cleveland Indian hat, and specifically the Chief Wahoo logo. As far as the politically correctness goes about that, what's your feelings about Chief Wahoo?
I love him. No, I love the Cleveland Indians. I have always been on the side of the Indians. I have been on the side of Crazy Horse. I have been on the side of Chief Jan George of the Nez Perce Indians. I have read everything there is. There's a beautiful book, In the Spirit of Crazy Horse, by Peter Matheson. It is a must-read. It's all about the Department of Energy and how they usurped the Indian reservations back in the old Wounded Knee, when Leonard Peltier was set up by the FBI, and he basically ran to Canada. He was extradited illegally from Canada, and he is in a Florida prison as we speak. And this is a man that was set up by the FBI, Anime Aquash, the Mi'kmaq Indian, who was shot in the back of the head, and during the original autopsy, they said she died of natural causes. The FBI cut off her hands. They cut off her hands because they did not. You read this book, and you will definitely say that you definitely got to do away with the Department of Energy, and the FBI has to come clean and say what they did on Wounded Knee back in 73.
Do you think the Washington Redskins should change their name?
No. No, the Indians don't care about that. This is a bunch of flower people and hippies and people from San Francisco and stuff. You know, the Indians were fierce people. Every day I wake up, I believe in a statement, it is a good day to die, grandfather. Chief Jan George said that. When I look in the mirror, I believe in two words, comprehensive propensities. It means rely on yourself. When you're out looking for heroes, I want all these children that grow up, when they go to brush their teeth, they look in the mirror, and that's where they see their heroes. I do not believe in the word associationism. I think it's a terrible psychological problem on our planet, and we use it all the time in our advertising. We use it all around. We use it in all of our drug ads. All you do, you used to see tobacco ads. Now all you see are Viagra ads and Cialis. You know, Cialis, see Debbie, see Jane, see anybody you want. But don't be pushing that down my throat.
I suspect I was going to leave this for the last question, but Cleveland or the Indians or the Cubs, you're for the Indians.
Either one that wins will be tremendous for the city. One has not won since 1908, and the other one hasn't won since 1948, when I was 2 years old. Tito Francona is the son of Terry Francona. Tito Francona, the original, was a great Cleveland Indian, played in that World Series. This seems to be the stars are lining up, in my belief. Terry has never lost a World Series game. That is amazing. He beat St. Louis 4 straight. He beat Colorado 4 straight. He was let go of the Red Sox because they said he had a drug problem. He had a very bad back. He was on pills, and they basically got rid of him, and they shouldn't have, because he is my teammate from 1981 with the Expos. I love Terry Francona. And I love Tito, his father. And, You know, the funny thing is, Epstein brought us the world championship. And you got Lester over there. You have Miller. You have the Miller kid pitching for Cleveland. You know what? There's a book out there, and I want everybody that's listening here, W.P. Kinsella wrote the book. It was Shoeless Joe. He also wrote the Iowa Baseball Confederacy. You know, it was about the Chicago Cubs playing a ball from Iowa. But he also wrote a short story called Thrill of the Grass and a second one called Last Pennant Before Armageddon. In that book, if the Chicago Cubs win the World Series, the planet comes to an end. So we're all pulling for Cleveland.
We're speaking with Bill Lee, candidate for governor. If you wish to join our conversation, the number is 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. When we come back, let's turn to the topic of education. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. In studio with me this morning is Bill Lee, candidate for Vermont governor. 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255 if you wish to join the conversation. Bill, let's turn to education. What would you do to enhance educational opportunities in Vermont?
Well, the race to the top that Obama had was not correct. And No Child Left Behind by Bush was another way of consolidating education. I believe in one classroom. You know, I believe in, you know, we need more teachers out there. We need to raise teachers' salaries. We have to educate our kids. We have to have a way that, and I think with the economy, if I'm elected and the economy goes the way I think it's going to do, with small is better, you know, you're going to have more kids. I believe if you get free education in Vermont, but you have to stay in Vermont and do at least 4 years of service within the state of Vermont for your free education. And then I believe, you know, with the technology advances, you can have more tech people here. You can have more of your industry, more artists. I believe it also in education, where you be more what I call generalized. I don't believe in specialized education. I believe everybody should think, put down your GPS, learn left from right, north from south. You know, your computer is between your ears. You have two ears and one mouth. So you should listen twice as much as you speak. And I believe in Montessori education. All my kids are college graduates. They went to Montessori. My daughter went to Waldorf right here in Wolcott. She was ballet. She was multidimensional. She ran all the time. She kept up with me. And now she's getting she's already got her master's. She's working on a third degree down in Georgia. She is going to be an anthropologist education. She can teach at any level. She's brilliant. And I believe that we just, in my day, we had an education system that taught Latin, that taught all that taught the forerunners of medicine. You have to have Latin to know medicine. We are using too many access on computers. And I would ban the handheld devices in school. I want people to think on their feet and learn. And I believe that at the lower level, you know, you've got to run people. I think people don't understand that physical education is so important to opening up one's mind. These kids are all jittery. They're all on carbohydrates. I would get carbohydrates out of our system. I mean, complex carbohydrates are all right. But those carbohydrates that are based on fructose and sugar and everything else, you don't produce the right glycogen for your muscle fiber and your brain. People go, my wife, when I'm in the car and I start getting mad or I start thinking, all of a sudden on a cold day, I have to turn on the defroster because I reject so much heat. It's called El Tumo. It's the fire within. And you have to have that fire to make your brain go so that you think right. And I'll tell you something. I may not be the smartest person on the planet Earth, but I am in Louisiana.
Let's just go back to what you said. When you said free education, you're talking about higher education
yes.
as well?
Yeah.
And how would you pay for that?
It'll be paid for because these people are going to hire. When you have a higher minimum wage, you're throwing more money into the system, and these people are paying taxes. There'll be more jobs. I believe the unemployment rate in Vermont will go down to 2%. You know, and here's the future. We've got to turn the corner away from the way we're going because we've got people, so many people in wheelchairs, so many people that are not working because they're physically incapable of working. And I believe that it's all related to your diet. I'm a conservative, and I believe that we're attacking the symptoms of the problem when we should be attacking the bigger problem and having a healthier. I want people to go to work, you know, in trade schools. I believe that everybody. I make baseball bats in Craftsbury. I cut down trees with George Allen. God rest his soul. He died. We've turned down the sawmill. I can't compete with Quebec. I'll tell you what we have problem in Vermont is a failure to communicate. People are not listening. I called into my healthcare facility for my physical. Every 2 years I have a physical. You got to have one. It's Major League Baseball insurance pays for it. I'm blessed. You know, I played hard. I have a good body and everything. And I go, I don't need the physical. But they said 11:05. I said, how can I wait till 11:05 and not eat? I said, I've got to come in and give blood. I want to come in at the first start. So I go in, and they have a meeting, and they go, we have no one here to take your blood. And I said, you said I could come in at 8:05. I said, yeah, but there's no one here to take blood. So I get mad. I go home. I think I had an apple. I did have an apple. So I drove home, and I got behind a logging truck. Logging truck had Quebec plates. On that Quebec, it had beautiful 73 maple logs with little teeny hearts. And I'm going, oh, my God, those are the most beautiful maple logs I've ever seen. And they're going to Quebec. I said, drop them off at my mill. I said, I can make baseball bats out of it. Out of the residual stuff, I can make bark art. I can make furniture. I can make rolling pins. Because I give all my extra wood, I give them rolling pins. And all this turns into our education. We're not educating for our arboreal forest here. Everybody should be in the woodworking business. They should be potters. They should be artists. And think of a Vermont-made product. It commands top dollar.
Let's go to Jeff in Montpelier. Jeff, if we're running out of time, if you can just hurry up the question, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. Hey, Bill. It's refreshing to hear someone talk about E.F. Schumacher and small economic growth. But I want to know, how would you address income inequality and wealth inequality? You've talked around that.
Just like Bernie Sanders said. Bernie Sanders said it. It's got to be on the federal level, and you got to take all these bankers and hedge funds people that are down in New York, and they got to pay their fair share. The pharmaceuticals got to pay their fair share. The money's not getting down to the people because of the tax structure at a federal level. We can't do anything about this in Vermont. We have to attack the problem federally or get out of the United States. I am not against taking Vermont, erasing the border from Quebec, and allowing all our people to go north. If we don't get the fair, we have to be like Norway. I'll tell you a story in Norway really quick. Guy goes in, he gets a procedure. His wife goes up to the administration office and wants to know where the payment center is, and they go, ma'am, we don't have one. That is what I want in Vermont. I want it to be simple. I want the disparity between the have and the have-nots to be less, because there's going to be a revolution in this country, and it'll be worse than Shay's revolution. And who's going to put it down? The militia? If I'm governor, I'm in charge of the militia. And I've turned swords into plowshares the other way around.
Who are you supporting for president?
Who am I supporting for president? Me. Voting for me.
Let me ask this.
I don't like either of the other two. I think they're the problem. The Republican and Democratic Party are dinosaurs. They're both dinosaurs. They don't think for the good of mankind. They think for the good of their own party, and that's wrong.
What we've got about 2 minutes left. What do you want people to know about you?
Not a lot. I don't have a cell phone. I don't have a computer. I do have spaceman@vtlink.net. I do have to, you know, I earn a living. I just got back. Here's what I did. What did I do on my off days from campaigning? I went to Sarasota, Florida to raise money for a women's professional museum. I was hugged by 17 90-year-old women. all of them played with my aunt. I do things for other people. I think people don't realize that's my whole goal in life is like Buddha. When you turn 50, you go around with a silver bowl and people will feed you because they want to know and take from your knowledge. And that's all I do. I have knowledge and like Nebraska. What's the N on a Nebraska Cornhuskers hat stand for? Knowledge.
Let me just, we got about 1 minute left, and I just wanted to get into this. Black Lives Matter or All Lives Matter?
Oh, I'll tell you what. You know why Black Lives Matter? Because you never see them lynching white people. Go back in history. Trust me. It's we're paying the sins of what we did when Rutherford B. Hayes became president. We sold out the black man in Reconstruction, and the Dixie Democrats took over, and they still prejudice against the blacks. The reason why this is happening is from the sins of the Civil War and the sins after the Civil War, and we're paying for it right now. All lives matter, of course. But until you rectify what you did to the black man in this country with slavery, we're the abolitionists. The Vermonters, more people die per capita than Vermont. Vermont loves to fight, and I'm a fighter.
Bill Lee, thank you very much for joining us on Open Mic this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, we'll have Bob Ney from Talk Media News, and then Open Mic. I got a question. The majority of Americans distrust or dislike the two major party candidates. What should a voter do if they don't like either candidate? Vote for the least offensive or vote for someone else? Bill Lee is going to vote for himself in the election. So those are the and we'll talk a little bit about recent polls in the governor's race as well. This is Open Mic, and you are listening to locally owned and operated WDEV News Radio on the Friendly Pioneer, celebrating its 85th year anniversary this year. That's right. We've had a glorious past, but we're celebrating the future. 85 years, WDEV News Radio. You're listening to WDEV AM 550, broadcasting from Waterbury and Montpelier, 96.1 FM from Warren, 96.5 FM from Barrie, and 98.3 FM from Montpelier, and serving the kingdom at 101.9 FM from Island Pond. Of course, we're streaming worldwide at WDEVradio.com. You can always listen to us by going to that website and clicking on the Open Mic podcast. I'm Mike Smith. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We turn our attention to national issues, and for an extended period of time, we'll have Bob Ney today talking about national politics. But before we start, we just listened to Bill Lee, who's a candidate for governor, former Red Sox pitcher, Expo pitcher, and he said Cleveland was going to be the World Championship and will win the World Series. And I want to ask Bob Ney. Bob, what do you say?
Now, who made this statement?
Bill Lee. Bill Spaceman Lee, former pitcher of the Red Sox, former pitcher of the Expos. Oh. And he's running for governor on the Liberty Union ticket.
I'm voting for him. Absentee. Right now. That's right. As we say in the Cleveland area, the election is not done till St. Mary's precinct comes in. That's the graveyard. Yeah, the Indians are going to take it. It's over with.
Yeah, but that Cubs team is pretty powerful.
Yeah, it's going well. Neither one have won forever. I mean, last time they won, FDR was president of the United States.
Okay. Let's turn to politics here. Obviously, it's a segment that we do quite often here. The Gettysburg Address, did it achieve what Trump was supposed to achieve? Thought he was supposed to achieve in it, or did the message get muddled with his comment about suing all his accusers?
It got muddled. I listened to a tape today. He did a show, a call-in show. I got to give him credit. He calls in. He called in live to a show I do in the mornings, okay, before your show here. Okay. And he wasn't asked about any of these women, and he just brought it all up on that show yesterday. I mean, everything. He just brought it all up about the porn star, you know, et cetera. And this is Trump.
Yeah, he really had some good things in that 100-day. It's not a contract with America, but the 100-day, you know, contract, what he calls it. He had some good things in there, Mike, but he just has to step over the message. The WikiLeaks is another example. They are horrific. You can't put them any other way. I know, you know, Robbie Mook, her campaign manager, was smiling yesterday big time on Sunday TV. He better rewatch it. It's nothing to smile about, what he was, you know, smiling about, and the Russians are doing it, etc. Having said all of that, the WikiLeaks, which in any other case, Hillary Clinton would be sweating so bad, it would be beyond comprehension. She's not, because Donald Trump continues to step on the message.
And I was going to ask that question. Obviously, you do believe, but do you think the WikiLeaks emails are having any impact on this election?
A bit. In the social media network, there is no doubt about it, including if you read our own subscription that we put out. Today, there's very little mention of all of the WikiLeaks junk, even in our own news subscription letter. Very little mention of it. National TV, here and there. Even CNN carried a little bit. But there is such devastating information in those WikiLeaks, but it's not having the effect for two reasons. One, Trump continues. I want to blame it on Trump before the national media. Trump continues to give the national media reasons to carry him versus the significance of the WikiLeaks, and two, the national media itself.
Let's. One of the things that has been making the news was the FBI, Governor McAuliffe, Hillary Clinton, and emails.
Right.
Basically, what just to set it up for the audience is that Governor McAuliffe urged a potential Senate, not U.S., but state Senate candidate to run in Virginia. One of the things that happened was that candidate got a lot of money, but her husband was the number two person. It became the number two person in the FBI.
Right.
And now there's a lot of people saying where there's smoke, there's fire. Is there a quid pro quo here? What do you think? Is this a big deal or not?
Well, again, if it would get out there, it's a big deal because it smells to high heaven when a governor gives an amazing amount of his campaign contributions, huge amount, $675,000 to a state Senate candidate?
Mm-hmm.
Really? And her husband is with the FBI, and she guarantees she never talked to her husband about anything? And he's a Clinton person from way, way back, McAuliffe is. He's, you know, born and raised with the Clintons, in a sense, politically. And then they didn't talk about it. People can't, they won't believe this type of thing. But again, this is not out there. The most damaging thing is Uma Abedin, Anthony Weiner's wife, who is Hillary Clinton's, you know, confidant, ran the State Department for her, runs the campaign. Uma Abedin's own words is she created this mess. I'm not saying that. Donald Trump's not saying that. This is her campaign manager because Hillary solicited $12 million from the King of Morocco. It's all in writing. And again, I don't care if the Russians hacked it, my granddaughter, or the Iranians. It's all there in writing. And again, that doesn't, you know, get out there. So normally the McAuliffe stuff would be horrifically damaging. I do think Comey is completely finished as a career with being able to hold his head above water. He should have known these things. He knew his FBI number two or three guy had a wife running for the state Senate. He knew it. You can see where the money comes from in public forums. He knew it. They can't excuse themselves. I'm not saying it was criminal, but they can't excuse themselves from knowing. Really?
The headlines in all the major newspapers today is that Obamacare is seeing huge premium increases, especially in Arizona, Oklahoma, Tennessee, and Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't see this on the campaign trail. It's not having any impact on the national election. You would think it would.
Well, again, in normal cases, if you had a normal candidate, you know, if you had, I'm going to throw Rubio in there. If you had Rubio, if you even had Cruz, who's, you know, really to the right of the right, especially if you had Kasich, these issues would be so out front. Of course, Kasich would have had a problem because he did subscribe to Obamacare in Ohio, you know. But putting that aside, these issues would be so out front. Obamacare is going to implode. Even Bill Clinton, we know, made a statement on that. It's going to implode. Stick a fork in it. It's done. Unfortunately, you can't just do the Ted Cruz, let's repeal it and throw it away approach. You can't do it. Too many people are in the system. Excuse me. It's too intertwined, and you can't do it.
Down ticket, Bob. House stays Republican, or does it turn Democrat? Senate, does it turn Democrat or stay Republican?
If I put money on it today, the Senate goes in a close call, but it goes Democratic. Now, the House stays Republican, period. I don't care what happens. Also, I think we have to be realistic about this down-ticket phenomena. Some of it's self-generated. Senator Ayotte, she didn't tank in her numbers quickly. When I say tank, I don't mean that she's out of the election, but her numbers didn't tank dramatically because she supported Donald Trump. They tanked because she reversed her position.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they can claim all they want. Donald Trump's taken her down the tubes. Her switch took her down the tubes. If you look at Pat Toomey, an ultra-right winger in Pennsylvania, which is a definite Clinton state, he's okay. He's hanging in there because he didn't change his tune on Donald Trump. He never did say who he'd support or who he'd vote for. And he stayed that way. He's going to stay that way until the end of the election. Some of this is self-flagellation. So I don't think it runs down the ticket where every Republican county commissioner and governor, et cetera, lose. But the Senate, I would say, is going to go Democratic, but they've got that goofy, antiquated cloture rule, where they have to have 60 votes to bring a bill up. Mm-hmm. Tell me that's really healthy for democracy, you know.
Bob, reports are saying that Trump's going to go after Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House, if he loses. If Trump loses, is Paul Ryan at fault?
Well, Trump's at fault. He can, you know, say rigged, or this one did this to him, or that one did that to him, or Miss America, or whatever he wants to say. He'll have no one to blame but himself, because if Paul Ryan doesn't support you, you move on. You can ding him, you can smack at him, but you move on. The problem Trump will have is this. After the first of all, conservatives right now are holding their nose voting for Trump, a lot of them. They don't like him. They don't consider him a socialist. They don't consider him a conservative for a lot of reasons. His positions on social issues, the budget, etc. So after the election, who's going to think that the right of the right is going to actually listen to Donald Trump? When it comes to Ryan, Ryan will make or break his own bed. If Trump's elected, Ryan's the most powerful person in America. If Hillary's elected, Ryan's the most powerful person in America.
Kellyanne Conway, Trump's campaign manager, says one thing, then the candidate says something else. What is going on in this campaign where it doesn't seem to be coordinated between the campaign manager and the candidate?
Well, he's on his third one, Corey Lewandowski, who ran my campaigns, as a matter of disclosure, 1998 and 2000. Corey was terminated, and Paul Manafort hit the wall. He was terminated, and Kelly Conway is the third one and has lasted, you know. But she's going to be juxtaposed a bit to Trump here and there, and that maybe is not so much by accident as it's kind of a cleanup, you know, where you come in and say, well, what we're really doing is this. It's kind of a cleanup. Some of it might be a naivete. I'm having trouble today. I'm having a senior moment. Might be being naive. Let me put it that way. It might be something of a nature of that, because they really aren't running this campaign the way campaigns are normally run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's for certain. It's been a odd year in terms of campaigns and how campaigns are being run. And that's a good segue into my next question. You know, you can pick and choose various polls that you want to look at, but if you take the average of numerous polls, Clinton is up approximately 5.5% nationally.
Right.
Is there anything that Trump can do to change this?
Yes. First of all, I think we have to – I'm going to go back to what I've been saying on your show and will continue to say, unless things change by Friday when I'm back. After everything that's happened – the Dalai Lama's made comments, the Pope, Trump's angered just about every group under the sun, to the left, to the right, in the middle, socially, you know, minorities, whatever, women. He's done everything a human being can do wrong, and Hillary is, I agree with you, as an average, 5 points up. as an average. She should be so far ahead that Donald Trump doesn't exist anymore. So, yes, what he can do is immediately today stop being, you know, a person that brings the House down upon himself. Stop addressing the issue with the women the way he does it. Just say it didn't happen. Don't say they're ugly. Why would I grab somebody like that? She's a porn star. That's all irrelevant. He has to just do a mantra every single day, all day long, about issues, the balanced budget, education, workers, the middle class. He has to do that and then zero in, without talking about his business and how great he is, zero in on the WikiLeaks stuff in a very controlled pattern about she took $12 million from the King of Morocco. She took $25 million from the King of Saudi Arabia. She took $12 million from the Sheikh of Qatar. You know, he has to zero in on, and what happened as a result of that? Not that she created ISIS, but that she's supporting, obviously, people who do support the creation of ISIS, which was the Saudis. Now, not just ISIS, but the WikiLeaks, you know, they've got some elements they can, you know, can you believe her? She says this to Wall Street, and she says that to you. That's the kind of thing that could be a good thing, and he would stay to issues. So, yes, it's salvageable, but if he's going to continue to be Donald Trump, it's not salvageable.
Let me ask this question, and I'll ask you both sides, both Clinton and Trump. Mm-hmm. Let's start out with Clinton. If Clinton loses, what will be the single most important factor that caused her defeat?
I think if she loses, that the single most, this is a good question, the fact that she could never get people to trust her. It wasn't enough about how bad Donald Trump is or how scary he was. She just couldn't get people to trust her, and she just didn't level with people. I mean, this whole campaign has been dance, 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 really. And that's what it is. If she'd have just said, look, I took some positions, I'm really sorry I did, this is the new me, it'd be different. But their shenanigans through WikiLeaks that have been exposed just reiterates the fact people just don't trust her. So her single most damaging thing is she didn't turn it around to give people a reason to finally trust her on issues.
And on the other side, is it the reason if Donald Trump loses, the single most important factor in that loss would be Donald Trump?
Donald Trump, but you know what? I thought about this yesterday. This is the number one in my mind. Forget the wall, because there are a lot of people. I have a cousin who came from Mexico who doesn't like the fact that illegals can come in. So, you know, There's a whole nuance of that issue that could be twisted and turned, all right? The single most factor in my mind started with Megyn Kelly. That night, and what he said about Megyn Kelly, and not that he didn't have some points that she's being unfair, but the way he started with women, the single most factor of bringing Trump down would be women. His method of operation from day one. Forget the accusations, but the way he handled it from day one about the women's issues, I think, and that was Trump being Trump.
Looking past these elections, if Clinton loses or Trump loses, on the Democratic and the Republican side, who's sort of positioned themselves? And I know we haven't even got through this election, but I'm talking about the next election already. Who sort of positioned themselves in a good place for the next election?
You're okay. Look, if I would have died when I was in public office, before I was embalmed, they would have said, who needs to replace me? Okay? I know how politics runs. But I think it's a very valid question, because if it's Trump or it's Hillary Clinton, we're going to have 4 years of political turmoil within both parties.
Mm-hmm.
Within both parties. Complete, chaotic political turmoil within the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. No matter who is elected, it's going to happen. So they're immediately going to be positioning, and it'll be Elizabeth Warren for sure on the Democratic side. The Republican side, I don't know. I argue some fresh new governor or something out of somewhere, and not going back to, you know, Jeb Bush, Mark Rubio, or Ted Cruz or something, or Kasich. I think it'll be somebody fresh.
What about
though,
Pence?
On the Democratic side.
What about Pence?
Well, now, I must say, Pence would have a chance. Personally, and I think I've said this on your show, I opposed him on some issues when I was in the House, and it was a pleasure, quote, doing business with him because he was quite a gentleman about it and held to his positions, but was, you know, not way out there. So I think, yes, he'd be a viable factor, sure.
And you're closest to this than I am. Who takes Ohio? Is it Trump or Clinton?
Trump. Narrow Trump.
Bob, as always, first of all, thank you for going over sort of
an extended
period of time. And thank you for being with us. We'll see you
on
Friday.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. Bob Ney, Talk Media News. Coming up, I want to sort of get your thoughts, because it's interesting what is happening out there during this election. Nobody's thrilled with the candidates. Majority of Americans distrust or dislike the two major party candidates. What should a voter do if they don't like either candidate? Should they vote for the least offensive candidate, or should they vote for someone else, third party? Should they write somebody in? Plus, WCAX has released a poll last night. Shows Phil Scott is up over Sue Minter by 7 points. And then that sort of goes along with the VPR poll, that the Castleton Institute, that was released last week, where it shows the race is tied. What attracts you to one candidate over the other? And what will be the determining factor on who you'll vote for in 2 weeks? So we'll address those questions coming up on Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We're going to open up the phone lines for the next 30 minutes. Get your opinions about a couple of questions. By the way, if you have a comment or question about Bill Lee's appearance this morning, give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. We're going to try to have all the gubernatorial candidates on. Bill Lee was on here. We've confirmed with Phil Scott. We have a date for Phil Scott to be on, and we're working with the Minter campaign right now to get them all on before the election. So if you have a comment or a question or an opinion about Bill Lee's appearance today, give us a call. Also, I'm really curious about this question. You know, a majority of Americans, we really find ourselves in an interesting predicament as we consider the candidates for president in these last 2 weeks. Because this has been anything, as Bob Ney said, this has been anything but an ordinary campaign. And the majority of Americans either dislike or distrust the nominees of both major political parties. And polls have shown that if you were voting and you had an opportunity to vote for Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, or neither, you would pick neither. So my question is, if you're not happy with these two candidates, who are you going to vote for? What are you going to do? A, are you going to say, well, I'm going to vote for the lesser of two evils? Or B, am I going to vote for someone else? Be very interested in your opinions on this. And then secondly, WCAX just released a poll. Shows Phil Scott 7 points up over Sue Minter. And also, this is in last week, VPR had a poll. And it showed that it was Phil Scott 1 point up, was within the margin of error, so it was basically tied. I'm not interested in how you're going to vote, but I'm interested in what is going to be the determining factor on who you'll vote for and what attracts you to one candidate over the other. Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to the phone lines, and let's go to Fred in Newberry. Fred, you're on Open Mic. Good morning.
Hi, Mike. I think people are going to vote their worldview. They don't care about sexual malfeasance, and they don't care about corruption. They care about their worldview, and if Clinton has their worldview, she gets to vote. And if Trump has their worldview, he gets to vote.
What do you mean, Fred, just out of curiosity, what do you mean by worldview? I guess
how she looks at the world, how she looks at economics, politics, how she looks at morality, the whole nine yards.
So you think it's really going to come down to issues?
Well, yeah, worldview issues. I mean, what do you think about the world? How do you think about the world? You know, that's what I think is going to happen. I mean, this is a big, broad thing. You know, worldview.
Hmm. Thanks, Fred. Thank you for your call. Let's go to Paul in Moncton. Paul, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mike. Give me just a minute on this because it takes a little setup.
Go right ahead.
Let me take you down this path. If I came to you or to anybody with a generic candidate A, I just heard, say, an anti-Semitic comment, most people would immediately think of Donald Trump. If I came to you and say candidate A just made a comment denigrating African-Americans or Hispanics, they think Donald Trump, although I would let most of those on the left understand that Hillary Clinton once referred to Robert Byrd, a KKK member and a ranking official, as being the soul of the Senate. And she and the Democratic Party claimed that their Mexican outreach program was the Taco Bell Initiative, and they referred to Hispanic politicians as needy Latinos. So Hillary or Donald there. If I said candidate A made a comment about the military denigrating them, they would think Donald or Hillary. If I said candidate A misappropriated money, they'd think Donald or Hillary. But in reality, that actually applies to a candidate here in Vermont, and that's David Zuckerman running for lieutenant governor, because all these things are true of things that he's done. And, yeah, I'm not hearing a lot of traction, you know, being hear a lot coming up about it. And I'm just wondering, is it fair to say that if those two are not fit to be president based upon what they've said, is David Zuckerman not fit to be lieutenant governor? I don't know, Mike. What do you think?
Well, I think those are the issues that are in the campaign. Those are the issues that his opponent, Randy Brock, should bring out. I think he is in advertising. But if you look at the latest polls, it doesn't seem like he's gaining much traction on those issues. And again, we only have polls. We don't have the vote. It doesn't seem like Randy Brock is gaining traction on those issues. Now, as you know, Randy Brock is African American. He's taken some exceptions to some of the things that David Zuckerman has said. He's been on this show. They both have been on this show. I've asked him about both of those incidences that you bring up, the travel expenses that were considered inappropriate for David Zuckerman, also his comments. I've had Randy Brock on here, and I've talked about those as well. You've got to decide where you're going to go on this race. It is an interesting race. But right now, David Zuckerman, and probably because he's a state senator from Chittenden County has one quarter of the population of the state, probably gives him a distinct advantage in this race. Let's go to Jerry in Berlin. Jerry, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning. I think Paul should do one of those disclaimer ads. He talks so fast and so well. The question I have is, I had a conversation with a friend this morning, and he's what I call a nomad. He lives in Florida in the winter and Vermont in the summer. And he votes in Florida, so he's doing an absentee right now. And he was telling me that you can't vote absentee ballot in Florida. And I was wondering if you knew anything about that, and that's really all I have to say. The other part of the election makes me ill.
Thanks, Jerry. Absentee ballot in Florida. I remember, Jerry, I don't know specifically. I would think you could. The reason I would say that is because remember during the George Bush Gore sort of episode in Florida, they were waiting on the military votes to come in. Those would be all absentee, I would suspect. But they were waiting on the military votes to come in. So let me find out for you, Jerry. I'm not really sure about that, but I would think that you probably can vote absentee in Florida. Let's go to Bill in Barrie. Good morning, Bill. You're on open mic.
Good morning, Mike. First of all, I don't want to talk about national politics, because I don't know what I'm going to do. Anyway, Phil Scott, the reason I think, if I didn't just come to Vermont, or the things I know about him, and I'll start with his primary campaign. The things that Bruce Lipson upset about Phil Scott is one of the reasons that I think Phil Scott is the guy for everybody because of that. Now, I want to bring up something we all know about, and you guys have been advertising it a great deal, Wheels from the Wharf. Now, there's no question. I have a vehicle that I got some tires from Wheels for Warmth. I've gotten them several times. And I don't think I'd have most of the week. My wife has a vehicle, and I have one. Hers runs in the winter because it's got a four-wheel drive. But at any rate, he works with everybody. If you have a problem, and when he's governor, you'll be able to go to him or to his office, and I know they will, just like Jim Douglas's. I had a problem once and went up to that office, and Neil Lundebrook came out, and he solved the problem the same way I believe Phil Scott would solve it. And so I think, regardless of the issues, that Phil Scott will work with everybody, and he will have everybody's concern, and that's the kind of person I want for governor.
Thanks, Bill. We're talking about a couple of questions today. One, we in our first hour, we had Bill Lee here. Just wanted to get your impression of Bill Lee. We're going to have other gubernatorial candidates, the other gubernatorial candidates here as well. Phil Scott has confirmed we're working with the Minter organization, the campaign organization, to get her in here before the election as well. Just wanted to get your thoughts on Bill Lee and what you thought of the interview today. And secondly, a majority of Americans really distrust or dislike the two major candidates for president. Be curious, if you're one of those voters, what are you going to do? Are you going to vote for the least offensive person, or are you going to vote for someone else? And then lastly, CAX released a poll last night, shows Phil Scott up 7 points over Sue Minter. Last week, VPR released a poll that showed him virtually tied. What attracts you to one candidate over the other, and what will be the determining factor on who you'll vote for? Give me a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We're exploring some questions with you, the audience. One of the questions that I have is Americans, this is a really weird election in that it's anything but ordinary. And we have the majority of Americans either disliking or distrusting both of the major party candidates. And they would choose neither if neither was on the ballot. So my question, if you are one of those voters, what are you going to do? Are you going to vote for the least offensive candidate of the two major parties? Or you're going to vote for someone else? And the reason I'm asking that question, and give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255 if you have an opinion. The reason I'm asking that is, you know, when this election cycle began, it began with Americans believing that no one was listening to them. No one. You know, and Bernie Sanders picked up on this, and Donald Trump, in a way, picked up on this. That voters felt that they were being ignored, they were being left behind by the political and economic system that was dominated by wealthy interests or these special interests that were bent on protecting the status quo. They wanted change, and Bernie's rise proved that they wanted change. And yet, as we near the end of this election cycle, is it likely that we're going to get the change that we wanted? I mean, most Americans believe that Hillary Clinton does represent the status quo, and it's a perception that's dogged her throughout this election process. I mean, she has other faults as well. I mean, she's cavalier about
following the rules or laws, the same rules and laws that apply to the rest of us and that we must follow and that we must labor under. And she's regularly embroiled in controversy, often self-imposed. I mean, we saw that with her husband in the first Clinton White House. If she wins again, we'll probably see it here. It is exhausting to a nation to see this. And then on the other hand, you have Donald Trump, whose outsider status really has propelled him to the fact that he isn't the status quo. And he's tapping into the anger and frustration that Bernie tapped into in a different way. And he's tapped into those that feel that the system, I'm not talking about the media, but the system is rigged and stacked in favor of the wealthy and connected. But Donald Trump's failed to grasp something. And that, and you saw that in the debates, I think, in a large degree. He's really failed to sort of grasp the intricacies, what you need to do in order to be president on domestic and foreign policy. And it is complicated, and it is intricate in terms of knowing what to do there. He's also failed to unite not only his own party, but Americans. He seems to be divided on this idea that he can win with just the white male vote. Maybe he can, maybe he can't. But does that really do anything in terms of uniting the party? He's alienated women. He's alienated college-educated white vote, who is usually pretty good at being a stalwart of the Republican Party. And he's allowed himself to be defined in this election as chauvinist, as a womanizer, as crude, and lacking the discipline to be the leader of the free world. So I'm sort of asking, what are you going to do in this election? If you're one of the ones that don't like either of these candidates, what are you going to do? Are you going to vote for the least offensive, or are you going to find someone else? Let's go to Sam in Williston. Sam, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. And I know where you sit, and I know how you feel, but the drumbeat of the progressives is exactly the drumbeat you just gave me. And yes, he is a slob in many ways because of what he has said and done. Yeah, I'll give you that, absolutely. Is he a criminal? I don't think he's a criminal. I do believe the other parties put a criminal process together, and that it is not just her alone. It got tentacles. It goes deep into our government, and it goes deep into our media. I mean, when they show how many people are on in the media that is sitting down at the table with them to get them into office, when they show government officials being taken care of, and from the FBI standpoint there of person who is looking into her, and his wife gets million some odd dollars or half $1 million for their campaign. To me, it all adds up. You keep adding tabs, tabs, tabs. And I really do think, as far as Trump is concerned, you got set up with Trump. The media picked him for you. They were going to make, because anybody else in the Republican Party would have taken her out. And at one swing, she would have been gone. And they knew it. They had to get a Trump. They didn't get a Trump, no way she would win.
Thanks, Sam. I think I agree with you. It seems like if there was another candidate, a Kasich or a Marco Rubio, they'd be leading right now and probably considerably in this election. It's interesting. So if you're a neither voter, what are you thinking out there? Where are you going? Let's go to Jim in Berrytown. Jim, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Well, this is related to what's going on currently. And follow me where I'm going with this.
Okay.
My family, when they moved to Vermont a long time ago, started up a dairy farm, and I was at my grandfather's house one morning for breakfast, and the milk didn't taste right. I thought it was sour. Well, the milk had come straight to the cow, to the table. It was not pasteurized, homogenized. It was the real deal. Now, my take on what's going on here in the United States is everything has been so pasteurized and homogenized that it's not the real deal anymore. I was reading in the Boston Globe a couple weeks ago, and there was a big picture in one of the pages of all these Chinese college students on their laptops watching the debate. Now, we know China is a one-government country, and they're watching here to see if that's what we are going to become. Because getting back to the milk straight from the cow to the breakfast table, the Democrats are not Democrats anymore. The Republicans are not Republicans anymore. And are we going to be a one-figure government?
Great question. Thanks, Jim. This is Open Mic.
The Open Mic Podcast is brought to you by Hickok Boardman, Dennis Ricker, and Brown.
Find us online at hbinsurance.com. And you're always welcome to visit us on Facebook, in Vermont, online, on the phone. Hickok and Boardman Insurance Group. We are here when you need us.